Hello and welcome into the Sight and Sound Technology Podcast. My name is Stuart Lawler. It's great to be back. It's been a little while since we were with you. It's March in Sight City. Anyway, it's great to be back. Let's cue the music. This is episode 96. podcast@sightandsound.co.uk is that all-important email address, and we always love to hear from you. Hope you're enjoying the lovely weather, by the way, in this part of the world. It's pretty nice at the moment once you dodge the showers between the humidity and the bursts of sun. Now, coming up on today's show, we'll be talking about a new solution to night blindness. We're going to be joined by Pierre Kedgels and Kirst Hoogsteen, and we have Aaron McKinnion from Capsys to talk to us about CapX. Stay right where you are. I don't know, I haven't done this in a little while, and I have buttons in the studio here and I'm pressing the wrong thing and turning the wrong faders and all sorts of stuff. Anyway, welcome in. It's actually great to bring you a show after a little while with new products. The new Luna glasses that Kirst and Pierre are going to tell us about in a sec. Really, really interesting technology that's going to be at Sight Village. And in a little while, we have Aram McKinnion from Capsys, and they have about to bring out some new technology called CapX, which will also be at Sight Village. Wow, there's going to be so many things going on at Sight Village. Monday the 7th and Tuesday the 8th of July at the Eastside Rooms in Woodcock Street in Birmingham. That's a lovely venue, by the way. I wasn't there last year. I've told this story on the show before. There was our national air carrier here, Aer Lingus, were in the midst of a very difficult dispute with their pilots, and my flight got cancelled at the last minute, and my colleagues were over there. I remember I was booked to do a seminar, and we were doing a remote seminar, one of my colleagues bringing a laptop into the room, and somehow we managed to get through it. But I'm really looking forward to coming back to Sight Village this year and seeing everybody. Now, podcast@sightandsound.co.uk is the email address. There's lots of content coming up on this channel this week. People will go, what? I can't believe it. Lots of content. We're going to be talking in a day or so to Jenny Axler from HIMSS. Haven't caught up with Jenny in a while, but there's some significant updates to some of the software running on the Braille Sense. Jenny will tell us all about that, and you'll be able to see those updates on our stand at Sight Village. And the one and only Stephanie Davies, our head of sales and marketing, is going to come along and talk to us as well later on in probably the next show, because there's some things happening for Sight Village, some promos, and Stephanie's been working hard behind the scenes to get these sorted. So I wanted her to come on and just give us a sense of what's going on. And of course, Stephanie and I were in California at CSUN. I have a few comments sort of in general about CSUN, and I'm going to wait till Stephanie is here so that we can kind of talk maybe just for a couple of minutes about CSUN. For me, it was different culturally, let's just say, being at an exhibition. But I'll talk about that in a little while. Now, podcast@sightandsound.co.uk, as I said, is that email address. We'd love to hear from you. Let's get on with the show and talk to Pierre Kedgels and Kirst Hoogsteen. I've spoken to many visually impaired people over the years who have huge challenges around night blindness. When the environment changes, when the lighting changes, people can find it very difficult to navigate around. And it's those nighttime travels that can really knock people's confidence, preventing them from going out once it gets dark. Well, there's some technology on the horizon that might be life-changing for those people. And I'm delighted to be joined today by a friend of the show. We've had him before, Pierre Kedgels. Pierre, you're very welcome.
Hello.
Good to talk to you. And we're also joined by Kirst Hoogsteen from the Netherlands. Kirst is the man behind Luna Glasses, which we'll talk about in a sec. Kirst, you're very welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Before we talk about Luna Glasses, Pierre, we've had you on the show before. You were talking at the time about Envision. I know you've been involved with Hable. And if you don't mind, just for a minute, I'd like to talk to you about what you do, because I've seen you connected to many companies, most of which I think it's fair to say have come out of the Netherlands, although I think maybe not exclusively. Are you like the Simon Cowell of these companies? This is like kind of if these guys were pop groups, do you take them in and then set them free?
Well, I'd rather not be compared to Simon, but yeah. Well, the thing is, I like to stay involved in this industry. I've been with Freedom Scientific for a long time. I was the owner of Freedom Scientific Benelux, with offices in Holland and in Belgium, and that stopped in 2016. And then I actually started focusing on new and young entrepreneurs who manufacture all kinds of stuff in the beginning. But later on, I found out that I have this vast network in the blindness and low vision industry that I could benefit from. Right. So then I started working with like companies exactly like Envision and Hable as well.
How do you do it though, Pierre? Because you clearly have a talent for spotting talent, right? So there, I mean, I went to CSUN this year. There was so many people doing smart glasses. You know, so many people. That was the one thing that came away from me. The other thing that came away, everybody was trying to do the solution to tactile maps. I think the reality is that most of them will fail, but you seem to be able to spot the right ones.
I kind of get in touch with them because I'm very focused on all the new things that are out there, right? So, and then when I see something, very often also on LinkedIn from organization and people that they're working on something new, and then I just try to get in touch with them and see if we can get a meeting, and I just explain them who I am and what I can do for them. And that seems to work, right? So being with Envision was also because they were one of the first to really see that there's a big market for smart glasses out there. Being with Hable, it's everybody knows that it's a struggle when you are visually impaired to work with an iPhone. So I thought it was quite revolutionary. Mm-hmm. And the same thing I had with the development of the Luna glasses. I started talking with Cast about a year and a half ago already for the first time, at which point it was a bit too early to really start cooperating. But then about 6-7 months ago, we started talking again, and we are now at a place where they could really benefit from all the people that I know in this industry. And I've been in this industry since 1998, so quite a long time.
Okay, long time. Okay, brilliant, Pierre. And I think it, there's no doubt it's great to have you behind these products. So, Karst, it's a good time to bring you in. I've been reading about Luna glasses. Some of my colleagues from Sight and Sound saw them last week or the week before in Sight City. I know our CEO was very impressed with them. But just before we talk about Luna glasses, maybe tell us a bit about yourself and what brought you to, you know, to a relatively niche area.
Yeah. So how I got started with this particular project is because of my own visual impairment. I was born with retinitis pigmentosa, which is a progressive eye disease. And one of the symptoms that you experience, as you already alluded to in the intro, is that people have a lot of trouble seeing in low light conditions. It's not just at night, but also indoors when it's low light. And that's something I was born with. My older brother has it as well. Especially, for example, in the winter time, it really puts a hard stop to your day, where you can go, going out with friends. You always need somebody to bring you home or to walk you to a bathroom. All those little things that you normally don't think about when you have normal vision, those things become a barrier. And to me, it was a big barrier as well in my education the whole time as I grew up. So when my vision declined during my studies, I decided I wanted to dedicate my professional career towards researching and developing assistive technology that could help me, my older brother, but also a lot of other people that experience similar problems. So first I did that in academia, in research. I worked on research papers, but those end after you did your scientific paper, you present it, and then you publish it, and then you go on to the next thing. But what I needed was a device that would help me in my daily life. So then I switched to build a company so we can really, the ideas, you know, you come up during scientific research to implement those into products that will actually help people in their daily living. So that's also how this endeavor got started. And I'm very happy that we're now closing in on a date where we can really bring a product to people that will hopefully help them a little bit in their daily life.
It's always interesting talking to people who, you know, let's, if you want to use the term, have lived experience of sight loss, as I have myself and you have clearly, and you're trying to find a solution that works for you. Were you kind of looking around the existing solutions already? Were you exploring what was out there? I take it nothing really did it for you.
Yeah, and the biggest thing for me when I started looking around and to solutions, especially head-mounted display systems or smart glasses, as they're more commonly known now, is that most products are very big. Of course, not all, but especially the ones with cameras and displays in them. And I looked at a lot of products, and you kind of look like you're walking around with a refrigerator strapped to your head.
Yeah.
It has a lot of RoboCop vibes. And that's not something that I would wear in public spaces.
Yeah.
And it was also my master thesis I wrote on, let's say, the how much function you need to offer before people will accept certain aesthetics. So there's kind of this, if it provides you a lot of function, then you're willing to accept it. But you need to balance that very carefully. So, and a lot of things were just out of balance for me. They look very big and cumbersome.
Yeah.
And I would just rather go with the alternative. And sometimes that's not going out with your friends or not going to the cinema or not going to a restaurant because it's too dark. And that's the thing I actually wanted to resolve, to help people in such a way that they can wear the device without feeling stigmatized and that they feel more comfortable in public spaces using assistive technology.
And it's interesting, Karst, I'd say, because it's all that you've mentioned and the whole thing of not going out and maybe becoming more, you know, not being able to socialize as much. But there's the stress and the anxiety around that, sort of maybe telling your friends or wondering, how am I going to tell someone I can't meet them because I'm just not, I'm not feeling confident, but maybe not wanting to admit that you don't feel confident.
Yeah. That's a big problem. But also, if you would decide to use a certain assistive device, you're also, without you perhaps wanting that, communicating to everybody around you your medical information. Mm-hmm. It's still a big problem that people experience with assistive technology.
Well, the good news is you've come up with a solution. Let's talk a bit about Luna Glasses and how that technology works and what it can do for people with night blindness. What have you developed?
Yeah, so let's first start off with the name, and it kind of ties into what we've just been talking about, because a lot of assistive devices, they're called something like the Electronic Sight Enhancer Pro, and that's not the route we wanted to go. We really wanted people to have something that really resembles a regular pair of glasses, and that's why we chose the name Luna, because it doesn't communicate anything about assistive technology, but it does communicate something about the moon. And one of our goals was to allow people to walk independently outdoors with just no street lights, but only moonlight, so they can walk in the dark. And we managed to do that by building a fully custom pair of smart glasses. Like, all the parts and components in it are purpose-built for allowing people to see in the dark in real time and in full color. So We have a special camera that is able to see in low light conditions. We have a small computer in one of the legs of the glasses that can process those images super fast. So you there's not a lot of latency. So when you move your head, you don't get nausea, or you don't have a very low response time to things that happen in the environment. And we increase the color, we increase the brightness, and we show those processed images through some projectors. We show them in the lenses of the glasses. So we reflect the light from projectors into the user's eyes. They can also look through the glasses. They're transparent. But we add to that a lighter version of reality. So all the things you couldn't see without the device are lit up. And we use like new developments in the augmented reality space, new display technology, in order to do that.
Can the user change the level of light? I suppose I'm kind of thinking not all users, not all people with low vision see in the same way, and maybe certain conditions people might be able to see a little bit, but not very much. Might like to see a little bit more. Can people kind of customize that view in the glasses?
Yeah. So. People can, there are a couple of buttons on the device. We try to keep it as limited as possible, so it's very easy to use. But with those buttons, people can adjust the luminance level that they, how the environment is lit up. So can be a little bit for people who not need as much assistance, but people who really want to brighten the environment can also push it up.
Okay, and I know that you also support prescription lenses. I was reading that on your website.
Yeah. So the device that we're building is fully compatible with prescription lenses. So you can go to any optician and then let prescription lenses be fitted to inserts that we provide. So you have your prescription built in the device. So you don't need to wear your other glasses underneath or anything. It's all in one device.
Okay. And is it a standalone product, Kirst, or is there an app that sort of allows it to do other things, or can the user just do everything from the glasses?
Yeah, so one of the important points for us is to keep it as easy as possible. So when the device launches, there is no app needed to connect to it. It will work fully standalone. There's also no cable. There is a battery built in. Of course, battery has a certain capacity. So if you really want to use it for a very long time, you would need to plug in a cable for prolonged use, but it works without wires. And eventually we're thinking about also developing an app so a user can customize a little bit more, but also can give us feedback. But that's something still on the horizon. When we introduce it, the device will work fully standalone without any app needed.
Okay, and I suppose when you're thinking of battery, this is probably the type of technology that people will turn on and off as they need them. So, you know, they go into a well-lit area, they switch it off, and then they're traveling somewhere else, they turn them back on. Is that how you envisage it?
Yeah, a little bit like sunglasses. So yeah. When you get to a place where you don't need them, you just put them in the carrying case, and when you need them again, you put up the device. We're making sure that the battery has a battery life, so you can do all the things like move from A to B. That's like our main goal, so people can go to work, to school, to visit friends and family. But it's a balancing act, because, you know, if you put in a larger battery so people can use the device, you know, for a very long time, then the device becomes more bulky, more heavy. So we're trying to balance that out so people can use it wirelessly, but also get enough juice out of it so they can do their daily things.
One of the things, Kirst, when you develop something like this, and you're developing for a very kind of niche area, and for people who have very specific challenges around night blindness, but, you know, somebody gets these and then says, oh, I'd love if they could also read my post or do something else. Are you thinking about those kind of things in terms of development, or is this the task they will be specifically there for?
Yeah, I really believe that if you want to do something really, really well, you cannot compromise. And for example, for doing AI things, letting the text being read up to you, magnifying 10 times, you need a different device. And you can build you can purpose build a device for that that will do that very, very well. But we really decided to focus on night vision, be the best in the world for night vision, but only night vision. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of cool ideas for other devices that will help people with, for example, things like reading text. But we would need to build a another device for that we can really optimize and give people a really nice, easy-to-use experience for that task.
So you want to focus these on a particular task for night blindness. You've been, I know, showing them, you were at the Sight City exhibition recently. I'm sure you've started showing them to people with low vision. What are the low vision community saying to you?
Well, they were very enthusiastic. And I can say that the glasses really kind of created a buzz at the exhibition. We had a lot of people coming up to us. I think that we've demonstrated them talked about them, somewhere between 300 and 350 times at least. And we've also had a lot of interest from the international community, potential distributors that want to work with us, like yourselves. Mm. It was a very good exhibition for us.
Yeah, it's always interesting when you're bringing technology out of the design stage, maybe, and bringing it out to a big group of people like that at an exhibition. But speaking of exhibitions, Pierre, you are going to join us at Sight Village in Birmingham on the 7th and 8th of July. We're really excited about that exhibition, actually, because it's going to be really busy. And this is the first time people in the UK will have a chance to see these glasses. So you'll be there to chat to people.
Yeah, and we're very excited about going there as well. I've been to this exhibition before, and I've always had a great time with you guys. It's the first time for people to actually see Luna, and that we can inform them on how the device works and what it looks like.
Okay, very exciting time, I think, for people where night blindness is an issue, and I think a really, really exciting solution on the horizon very soon. Karst, just before we finish, where can people find out more information?
We have a website, www.lunaglasses.nl. So that's where people can subscribe to the newsletter, and we're sending that bi-monthly, I believe. So we'll update people as we have new developments, things that are worth sharing. We'll send people an email.
Okay, we're looking forward to staying in touch with you guys. It's great to meet people who are creating a solution to a problem. It's even more interesting when those people are part of a community of users who have that problem themselves and are fixing it. So congratulations, Karst. It sounds like a really exciting product, and I'm really looking forward to catching up with you guys at Sight Village. Pierre, always nice to chat to you too. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of weeks, but for the moment, thanks a million for your time.
Thanks for having us.
Now, if you've ever had a guide dog and the dog has had to retire, you may well feel somewhat vulnerable, somewhat anxious about going out on your own, and especially transitioning back to a cane. I've never had a dog myself, but I know lots of people who have, and they definitely tell me that sometimes it can be very, very hard, especially in those early days. Well, we're kind of excited here at Sight and Sound Technology because we're just about to introduce a new device that might help with this. And it's from our very good friends at CAPSIS in France. And I'm delighted to be joined by Aram McKinnion, who is a friend of the show. I was just listening back to a show last night that Aram was on from 2018. So Aram, you're welcome back. It's been quite a while, but welcome back.
Thank you, Stuart. I'm very happy to be with you.
Great to have you. How's the weather in France, by the way, first of all?
It's quite sunny and I would say even heavy for this period of time. Usually we have better time than this, but we survive.
Good stuff. Listen, you were on with us. I was just listening to it last night. You were on in 2018 on episode 4 of our podcast. If anybody wants to go back through the archives, you can hear this. And at the time we were talking about the smart vision phones, they've been hugely popular, haven't they? People love Smart Vision.
Yeah, it was a very good experience for us because it was pretty new. We had a huge acceptation of the button-based smartphone, which was the second one at that period. Now, from that point, we have progressed also and make the smartphones more appealing, and we are now in the Smart Vision 3 program since almost 2 years now, which is doing pretty fine, and we're pretty happy to see those devices helping the people in everyday's life.
Okay, and they're great phones. I know a lot of people, you know, that we talk to are very, very passionate. It's like, you know, if you have your Smart Vision, you won't choose anything else. So I know lots of people like them. But listen, Aram, we wanted to talk to you today about a product you're going to show, you're going to have, and you're going to be talking about at the upcoming Sight Village event in Birmingham. We're looking forward to having you on the stand with us. And this is one called CapX. And this is sort of, as I said in the intro, we were talking about, and we were just chatting about this actually before we went on air, people who maybe might be a little bit anxious, have had a guide dog, and just that fear of getting out and about again. And you've developed something that helps with orientation, isn't that right?
Yes. Stuart, you know, you probably remember and back to years now, we were in navigation devices. We made Captain at that time.
I remember the Captain for people on their bicycles, wasn't that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And we incorporated Captain in our smartphone as an application. But the navigation only has a limitation. And as you said, we thought a lot in the past years how we can come back to a kind of navigation, actually not really navigation, but the orientation help to the people who can feel much comfortable wearing a wearable device and be out of danger when they walk outdoor. So we walk a lot, worked almost 5 years to bring the right technology into the market. And yes, we the new device we will show at Sight Village in Birmingham in a couple of days now. It's a wearable, so it's a imagine a headphone with a camera on it, which is only 50 grams, and you have the computing unit connected wirelessly, which you can put in the pocket or in the bag, which computes all the algorithms, actually AI algorithms in the box, which is only 200 grams, and with no connectivity, no cloud computing, nothing. Everything is on board to help the people to walk outdoor very safely. Because why we I'm telling you this because we can detect any danger, whether it is obstacles, it's related to the ground, or the semantics of the ground, because we are able to make the difference from the road and the sidewalk. So this is a key issue when you want to to go out and feel safe. This is what we thought, and now it becomes a reality with CAPEX.
It's really interesting, right? Because there are so many real world examples I'm thinking of. You know, I've had many times around me walking along with your cane and whack into a truck because it's parked on the pavement. Or today, yeah. I was at my son's primary school and I was walking in to the door, and there was big wheelie bins on the path, and it was a really narrow path, so I had to get off the path to go on the road to get around the wheelie bins. So just give me a sense, if I had been using CAPEX today, what would have happened?
I'll give you the features that we have implemented in CAPEX. So the primary feature of CAPEX is the orientation. It means that we analyze the environment with actual world environment with metric distances, whether it is the length or the width and everything. And we can extract from this 3D model that we built using the AI algorithms all the information. Providing we add to this 3D world that we construct the semantic information, which is everything you can potentially see through a camera. So from this, we extract all the information to first ensure the orientation using the either TTS or 3D sound. The second, we announce all the useful information surrounding the person. For example, you are walking and what you need is to find a door or stairs or a bus stop or anything like crosswalks, for example, crossroads, sorry. So we will announce all and notify all this information to the person, giving the direction and the distances. The second, the third is the scene description. So anytime you feel uncomfortable because you don't know exactly where you are, so you can ask all the surrounding elements in the scene to be described wherever you are with the orientations and the distances.
How are you doing that, Aram, if you don't have connectivity to the internet? I know you mentioned AI a few minutes ago, but if you're asking for a description of a scene, so for example, if I'm using it and I'm asking for a description of a scene in a new place, does something not have to go online to get that information?
No, because the CAPEX has a camera. So we capture an RGB a picture, if I can say, but we do it constantly, of course, as a video. And from single image, we can extract all the elements at pixel level with the distances. In metric distances, it's not relative distance, it's a metric distance, and we build a 3D a point cloud. And this is a huge achievement because you need to, if you want to guide a person to avoid the obstacles, you need to have information of a real world. And the real world is not only I have a tree, or between the tree and the table, you have to know what is the free space in metric distances, whether I can guide the person to go there or not. So we build all this model using exclusively onboard AI models. So as I said early in the podcast, we capture and we process the information in the small box, which is 200 grams only, which is in your pocket, and all the AI models running inside. So we don't need to go online to have the information back. And we are we have a real-time implementation of it, because we cannot rely on to having third-party computer running with models, and you send the picture, and you have maybe in a minute or seconds, which will not give any confidence to the user. So we analyze locally all this information, and we extract the essence of what is in the scene to not only orient the person, but also describe in real time what is around, or notify the elements in the scene. So you just imagine a normal person, I would say, will approximately have a walking speed of 1 meter per second. So we are able to analyze everything and have an analysis of the real world within a few hundreds of milliseconds. Actually, it's exactly 250 milliseconds. So we can do this four times or five times, depending on some parameters, but between 4 to 5 times per second, which will give us an analysis every 20-25 centimeters that you are walking. So we can guarantee that there is no danger related to the latency of the processing. And this is the key for me in terms of confidence that you can have in such a device. And doing that, we can be as quick as possible to detect the dangers and notify to the person. So this is honestly a unique device, because most of the devices you see, they are connected ones. And there is very few which can do such processing on board, having in your mind that you have only 50 grams in the head and 200 grams in the pocket.
Okay. Now, just maybe if we talk through a couple of real-world examples, Aaron, because I suppose I'm thinking myself as I'm using this with a cane, and there might be other people listening who are saying, okay, you mentioned crossroads, for example, a few minutes ago. Can you tell the device? So let's say you're in an area that you're familiar with and you know where the crossings are. So you don't want to be notified about the crossings, but you want to be notified if there's, I don't know, wheelie bins or there's obstacles on the path. I suppose what I'm asking is, can you cut out certain things that you don't want to know about, but tell it the things that you do want to?
Yes. So the notification is for the announcement of the element. You select from a list what you want to we notify. We don't want to, I mean, again, the essence of this device also is to have for the person using it the lowest mental load as possible.
Yes.
So for example, if you want only to see stairs, for example, you don't care about all the rest, because you know, but stairs is maybe you cannot detect. So you will select using the voice command the stairs, and that's it. So if over the walking journey, if we see stairs, we will notify you the stairs by using a 3D TTS. The 3D TTS is a TTS which is located as a source of a sound coming from a direction, which the location of the stairs is there.
Right.
and also the distance to the stairs. So we will notify this very clearly. So if you align against this this sound, actually the sound will be just in front of you, and then you just need to listen the metric distances, and you know if it is 2 meters, 1 meters, and obviously you have your cane, and you will touch the stairs with the cane, and here you are.
Can you configure the warning time? So like, in other words, I want to be warned, I don't know, 3 meters before I get to the stairs, or 2 meters. Can you set that?
Yes. Okay. Yes, you can.
Okay.
Yes, you can.
So you're walking along, as you said, there's this predefined list of things you can be notified about. You set the ones that you want. You set the time at which you want to be notified, or the distance rather, from the item that you want to be notified about, and then you just walk along, right?
Yes, exactly. Okay. And if we find something on the ground or up to the men's height, it can be branches, it can be, imagine a door of a truck.
Yes.
It can be anything from the ground up to men's height. We will detect it, and we will avoid this for the person.
Even if it's not in the list. So if there was a truck.
Even if it is not in the list.
Okay. Okay. So you'll get some notification, and at least you can stop and go, okay, there's something near me. I've got to be careful.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Now, I suppose we need to be clear. This is it's an obstacle detection system, or obstacle avoidance system as well. It is not GPS, right? And you're being very clear on this. So this does not navigate you places.
Exactly. This is orientation device, and we don't have any GPS related navigation instructions to the person.
Okay.
So for doing this, it's possible to do, because you can connect to the headset, your smartphone, as a regular headset, okay, and run on your smartphone any applications, your preferred navigation GPS application, and both information will be overlapped, and you will have these two information, one for navigation, the other one is orientation and danger avoidance. So you will get to the point you want safely.
Can you also take calls using that headset?
So could, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect.
Of course.
Okay. So you have the computer, you have the headset. They're connected wirelessly. The computer is doing all the processing power. What's the battery life for all this tech?
The battery life is 4 hours for the configuration, so you can use non-stop 4 hours.
Okay.
After 4 hours, you need to charge the battery, providing that if the headset part, because headset part obviously has a little lower battery power, you can connect the power connector which is provided on the box to the headset, so it will charge your headset almost right away. It's 10 to 15 minutes to charge it. So we can guarantee that the configuration will work 4 hours nonstop.
Okay. Now you're going to be bringing this to Birmingham in a few weeks. Will people be able to actually experience this with you? Are you going to be able to maybe let people have a walk around with it?
I hope yes.
Okay. Okay. Brilliant.
You know, we haven't finished yet everything, but yes, we will be able. You know, this is for the moment something that I have to emphasize here. It's done for outdoor at the moment, It may and probably will not work indoor.
Okay.
So for the tests, we have to go out.
Okay.
But in the 6 months coming, 6 to 9 months, it's going to be also indoor device.
Okay. And you are hoping to release at least the initial version for outdoors later this year?
Yes, it's our plans today show that it will be commercially available in October.
All right, and we always leave the price question till the end. And I know prices are not fully confirmed yet, but I think you're happy to give us some rough prices.
Yeah, I can only give you a rough estimation because it's not so rough, but because we are in the industrial phase, so it's going to be around 3,000 euro.
Okay, fantastic. Listen, we're looking forward to seeing it in Site Village in a couple of weeks' time. Aram, at time of recording, it's less than 2 weeks away. Site Village, of course, on the 7th and 8th of July. And we're really looking forward to having you with us on the stand. It's always nice to have you there, Aram, and to chat to people about CapEx and give people a look at the technology. So listen, thank you for all that you do for the community. It's great to catch up with you. And we look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you so much, Stuart, and we'll see at Site Village.
Well, many thanks to Aram McKinnion there. I'm really looking forward to having a look at CapEx. Actually, honestly, as I said earlier, I'm going into my son's primary school today, and there were these huge bins on the footpath and me on the road. Of course, thanks to friend of the show, Pierre Kedgels, and of course to Hookstein, dying to catch up with those guys too at Site Village, and we're dying to see you there. That's all we have time for on today's show, but we are back again before the end of the week. Jenny Axler and Stephanie Davies still to come. Until then, from Stuart Lawler and everybody at Sight and Sound Technology, thanks for listening and goodbye.